Have you ever found something strange that didn't belong to you in your home? What would you do if you were ripped from your bed by an unseen force? How would you handle over 10 years of intense haunting? Today, we test the believability of the Battersea Poltergeist.
Welcome to Believing the Bizarre,
where we dive into the unknown and the unusual
and tell you whether or not we find it believable.
That is right. It's Tuesday. We're heading to the UK because apparently that is the only place that poltergeists exist.
I would love to travel to the UK one day. Just I hope
to
so.
Just to see a poltergeist?
To see a poltergeist? Be like, wow, we don't have these in America.
You got tea, you got crumpets, you got poltergeists.
And
fish and chips.
Fish and chips.
Yes.
And lots of things that are British and not American.
Yes. But especially poltergeists.
Yeah, where is this? What's this place called?
Battersea.
What the hell is that?
We'll get to it.
All right.
We'll get to it. I can't do an episode with a location, which most episodes have a location now, where without describing where it's at, because I know you'll ask.
I will.
So I might as well.
It's my favorite part, honestly. I love traveling through my ears.
Once we say the name of the location, Charlie checks out. He's really only in it for the location.
I do really like geography a lot.
There's websites where you can pretend to be in other cities. Like, it's like a video of you traveling around. Like, If you go to the website, you go to a website.
Isn't it just Google?
Pick a city. No. Pick a city, and it becomes a video of you just, like, traveling around. And then there's another website you can go to. You can have two windows up. I wouldn't recommend too many tabs, but you could have, you know, you can have two and things function well. And it can play a radio station from that town.
That's really cool.
So you could be listening to the radio and driving around in a town while you're sitting on your couch in your underwear.
Kind of like that. I don't like the underwear part, but I kind of like that.
You don't like underwear?
Not just underwear.
How do you feel about poltergeists?
I'm a big fan.
If you don't know what a poltergeist is, neither did we last episode.
We know a little bit more now.
You were very much on point. It's very much about negative energy.
Yeah.
Like a culmination of that. Although this one, if it is a poltergeist, might challenge that a little bit. I'm going to drop this. The sources that I used were dailymail.co.uk.
Okay. Makes sense.
History Hit. And of course, Mysterious Universe.
Oh, good, good, good.
Yes. So we've done poltergeist, listener submission, ghost stories. I feel like it's been a minute, though, since we've done something traditionally spooky. It might be since the last poltergeist.
A couple of people reached out and said that poltergeists were not human spirits.
Yes.
Which I get. I understand that.
Well, that's what you claimed in the Thornton Heath.
Yes, but they confirmed it.
Okay. If they hit us up on social media, it is facts. Also, I guess Blumhouse bought the rights to this, like, the story.
Oh, really?
So I think it's going to be coming out either as a film or on Peacock. Mm. Like, they're going to be using the story. And there's a podcast all about the Battersea Poltergeist. So obviously, we're not known as a deep dive podcast. Although, we did just put an hour and a half episode out. Just saying. It was a movie. Not a Peter Jackson movie, but it was a movie. But there is a podcast that's, like, dedicated to the Battersea Poltergeist.
That's all they talk about?
Yeah. So if you're interested, I check that out.
Wow, that's wicked.
So here is something I found. And this is just to get you in the mindset of the poltergeist before we dive into the story. It's from skeptic.org, which I really appreciate. I promise you.
I like Skeptic.
I don't run that site. I don't spend most of my days there, I promise.
Have you heard Skeptic Podcast?
No.
I listened to them when I did research for the Loveland Frogman.
Okay. Was it just me whispering in your ear? It's not real.
No, it's. I think it's two guys where they talk about things like even more skeptically than we do. Yeah, like they're like, well, scientifically, so our frogs are amphibians and don't walk on land. I'm like, well,
a couple of middle-aged white guys.
I don't know how they're. I think they're probably younger than us.
Okay.
I don't know.
So here's a quote I got from skeptic.org. Quote. Russell Hope Robbins, 1959 classic, quote, Encyclopedia of Witchcraft and Demonology, unquote, lists the four key poltergeist indicators. Do you have a guess? I'll give you like a pretend quiz here. Give me the four that you think.
Oh boy.
Poltergeist indicators.
Is fire one?
Kind of, yeah.
Is knocking one?
Yep, noises, knocking, or footsteps.
Knocking, fire.
The other one, let me just say, the other one was major disasters such as arson, fire. So okay. You got two, you're 2 for 2 right now.
Knocking? Puddles?
No.
No.
I'll give you one more guess.
That one's kind of rare, so that makes sense. Maybe, I don't know. Scratches.
There are scratches that I think they file that under noises. The other two are telekinesis, so objects moving on their own.
Oh, okay.
And the disappearance of small objects and later discovering them.
You know what? That makes sense, the telekinesis, because you think of that famous scene in Poltergeist where she walks in and the room's just like spinning.
Yes. Even in Thorn yeah. Heath, something, was it coffee or a Thorn egg? Heath, something.
A glass.
Dentures?
Yes, dentures in a glass.
Yeah. So, yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, just to reiterate, the four indicators of poltergeist are known to be noises, knockings, footsteps, scratching, telekinesis, objects floating around, disappearance of small objects and their rediscovery later, and disasters such as arson. Keep that in mind as we move on to the Battersea Poltergeist. So, the Battersea Poltergeist involves just a normal, ordinary family in the UK thrust into some supernatural spookiness. So this is a quote from History Hit. I think it did a really good job describing the family. Quote, the Hitchings family were a seemingly ordinary working class group. There was Father Wally, a tall, gaunt London underground driver, his wife Kitty, a former office clerk who was a wheelchair user due to chronic arthritis, grandmother Ethel, a fiery character known locally as Old Mother Hitchens, her adopted son, I think they mean her as in Kitty, but I could be wrong. Her adopted son, John, a surveyor who is in his 20s. And finally, our main character, Shirley, Wally and Kitty's 15-year-old daughter, who was just about to start art school and worked as a seamstress.
That checks out, though. That she's 15 and a girl? That checks out.
In art school?
That, oh, you mean that part doesn't check out. As a poltergeist? Out. Yes, as a poltergeist.
If 70 years later she had student loans, at least a portion of them are now gone from art school.
You said wheelchair user. Yeah. So that made me, I was just,
unquote, by
it's
the
a
way.
Weird way to phrase that. It feels like.
It's not the way I would have said it.
No, I would have said wheelchair bound.
Or she's in a wheelchair.
Yeah. I just think she's like, she uses wheelchairs. Yeah. She does marijuana.
Due
she's
to a weed her arthritis. User.
Yeah.
She's in a wheelchair. I don't know. You take it up with History Hit. So this is Battersea, which is southwest London, which is in England, and the year is 1956, like I said, the year my father was born. So it's January, it's morning, and the main character we're going to start with and we'll kind of remain with throughout the whole episode is Shirley, the teenage daughter, the art student. So she's walking to her bedroom, and she immediately notices something peculiar. There was a silver key sitting very blatantly on her pillow, and it didn't seem like it was dropped there or it was put there without intention. Like it was set down on her pillow with a purpose, like it was presented for her to find. So naturally Shirley was intrigued, and she started asking everybody in her family, why is this key here? Why is it on my pillow? Where does it go to? Like, what's it for? But nobody in her family knew the origins of this key or how it ended up in Shirley's room. So her father, Wally, took the key and decided that, hey, we might not know where it came from, but let's find out what it's for. So he started going from door to door and lock to lock in the house to see what purpose this silver key served. But he ran out of luck. It didn't fit anything. And honestly, the family, it wasn't even clear what kind of lock this key was intended to open. So despite all the hoopla that this key caused, within a few days, the key kind of just disappeared. It just kind of vanished. And since it disappeared, everybody just kind of was like, okay, we couldn't use it anyway, so let's just keep moving on with our lives. Kind of a callback to the indicators, right?
Yeah, that's wild. That's so funny. The poltergeist is just like, you're about to have a weird day.
It's going to be strange. That is today. Weird. That's actually strange. It's a very safe, harmless prank. Give someone a key.
You're right.
It's going to kill them because they're going to want to use it, but you like if you don't know what it goes to.
Mm-hmm. That's funny.
So just as strangely as it appeared, it disappeared. But it was kind of like the tipping of the domino, because it doesn't really come into play again later, but this was like the first strange occurrence that was like a landmark or like a marker in their mind of like things starting to go strange.
Gotcha.
Because that very evening is when they started noticing very strange activity. So it's nighttime, everyone's gone to sleep, and they start hearing a strange sound coming from within the walls. Scratching. Was it Roland Doe? There was another one we've done where there was like this incessant scratching, but it's just scratching. It's consistent.
You know what makes me think of? I know we didn't do it.
What?
But The Conjuring, Bathsheba.
Ah.
But I think you're right. Roland Doe that was involved with. I don't know. We've done so many ghost stories. I don't
done
think
it, so many.
I don't think it was Roland Doe. I think it was something else. Was it Annalise?
Maybe it was Annalise. There was something we did with scratching.
Yes. I think it was Roland Doe.
But I could be 100% wrong.
I do not remember.
Could be 100% wrong. So again, it's nighttime. It's January. It's 1956. We are near London. You're laying in bed. It's nighttime. And you're just hearing this scratch, 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 scratch. And it gets louder and louder and kind of almost like demanding. So similar to most people, I assume Wally, the father, is like, oh, we got rodents in the walls. We got some mice up in here. I got to check this out. So he gets out of bed and he goes to see if he can find a rodent, find the source of the scratching or any type of hole that they came in. But as he got up and he started inspecting, the scratching sound quickly pivoted to a loud thumping. Wally described it as if somebody was taking their fists and pounding on the walls with all of their strength. And suddenly, the pounding seemed to spread through the entire house like a wildfire. The home erupted with thuds and bangs, and furniture began shaking, and picture frames rattled against the walls. It was like the house came alive and became violent. Lights were flickering on and off on their own, and obviously by this point, it wasn't just Wally, the entire family was awake. And they all stood around in silence and terror as their house was overtaken with all these loud noises, scratching and shaking furniture. So here's a quote from Shirley. Quote, I lived through the Blitz and I remember the bombs dropping. It was the same level of noise. The sound was coming from the roots of the house. The whole house shook like it was an air raid. It went on night after night for 3 weeks. We were shattered. It was as if noises came from the bowels of the earth. It went on until daylight. We were traumatized. I remember clinging to my dad saying, please make it stop. Unquote.
That is so scary.
So Charlie, you wake up, it's scratching, and then it turns into loud banging and things are rattling and shaking. What would you do?
I would probably get in a door frame, as we learned to do during earthquakes. But imagine just like waking up, hearing a scratching, probably in your underwear, half naked, with a cock gun and like, I don't know.
I don't have a gun.
A cock gun.
Whatever that is, I don't have it.
It's a cock. You put cock in it and you fill holes.
What?
With cock to fill them.
What are we talking about right now?
A cock gun to fill the hole.
One, I don't have that. Two, how would that... What holes?
The mouse holes.
There's no mouse holes.
I assume there are holes that the mice were getting into.
All right. I want a picture of your bedside, and I want to observe what items you keep on your end table.
It's my gun.
Oh, okay.
But no, a cock gun, you fill holes with cock. Have you ever, you know, in your bathroom?
When you ripped my thing off my wall... That's
that was
you didn't shoot it with a gun.
That was different. That was a different kind of material. But anyway, so you're walking through a hallway with this cock gun and or something else, and it just starts escalating from like little scratches to these giant booms. You go, what's all this now? Oh, bloody hell!
And then you turn to your wife. You're like, we're gonna need a bigger cock gun.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, barnacles.
Oh, barnacles. Yeah, so, okay, so you didn't really tell me what you would do, but that's okay.
Oh, I don't, I'd be very sad and scared, I guess. Okay.
That's more genuine. So, unlike, one thing that I think is interesting is because it feels theatrical, but this is one area where I feel like it departs from movie fantasticalism and heads to the real life. Because typically horror movies focus on isolation, but we are dealing with a loud cacophony of noises, and obviously it woke up the family, but it also people around the town heard it too. People on the street heard it.
Oh wow.
So neighbors, like the first night especially, neighbors were coming out of their houses and standing in their yards and just gawking at this house and wondering what the hell was going on. So this became like a thing. It wasn't like this family was trying to keep the secret or only the family heard it, this psychological horror. Like no, like people started noticing. Like, neighbors were noticing, and we'll get to it later in the story, but, like, photographers were coming, investigators were coming, like, this became a thing.
That's so crazy. Like, I was gonna ask you,
Yeah.
If neighbors notice as well.
But going back to the main night, it all kind of like crescendoed to all this loud, crazy noise. Everybody's freaked out. And then it was in a very jarring fashion. As quickly as the noise came, it stopped. All of a sudden, just all at once, boom, done. And like the silence carried its own weight. It was this eerie, almost second guessing of like, did we really just hear that? Did that really just happen? But then they looked at each other, the family, they looked at the furniture, and it was very, very real. And obviously they're baffled. They have no idea what it was. They have no idea what to expect. So Wally's like looking around the house, like, I don't know if he knows what he's even looking for. Like, what do? You just, oh, that was weird.
No, I know.
That's some big ass mouse.
Yeah, you can't like, you're just like, well, I guess everything's not destroyed? Question mark?
So he wouldn't have believed it like 2 minutes before in the chaos, but The house appeared to be normal.
That's good.
Nobody was hurt. Nothing also was good. Damaged. So he was like, there's no mice. So I guess we'll just go back to sleep. The next morning, though, the police were notified about, obviously, the disturbance from the previous night, and they had a surveyor brought in and looked around, tried the same thing, look for rodents, any type of disturbance. And wasn't able to find anything. And I just kind of, they were stumped. It was like, I don't know, man. Don't know what that was all about.
That's really crazy.
So they tried to go on with life as usual. But like her quote, I mean, this continued like 3 weeks nonstop. Actually, much, much longer than 3 weeks. It actually, spoiler, it's 12 years.
What? 12 years of that every night?
Not that every night, but this
Jesus Christ.
Encounters, experiences, little and small are the same words and big. 12 years.
That's a bad decade.
Yeah. So, yeah, in the evening, noises would return, specifically banging, scratching sounds, which seemed to be coming from the walls, the floor, the ceiling. They were saying that these sounds seemed to even be coming from within the furniture. And it was alarming. Like, at first, it was a freaky event, but it was becoming a regular occurrence where out of nowhere, without any warning, anytime, day or night, they would just experience this. And then it escalated again from these banging sounds to moving objects. And not just like the rattling of the picture frames or like the shaking of chairs and furniture, but things were being full on moved and slid across the floor. Lamps and end tables were flung around and flipped over by seemingly unseen hands. And at times, objects would levitate in the air or be thrown across the room directly at family members. They said the objects would hover and they would move towards you very, very slowly at first and then just dart towards someone really quick and they'd have to actually duck. So both the intensity and the strange factor were escalating all the time. They were saying slippers seemed to walk on their own as if somebody was wearing them. Their piano would play music on its own. Pens would fly around. And pictures and words would be scrawled onto the walls.
What words?
They couldn't read it. And some of it looked like, I don't want to say mishmash. It was like illegible. I think that's the fancy term.
Okay.
There were some symbols. They'd say they'd see crosses.
Okay.
And some of it wasn't English. Some of it was French.
Oh, okay.
One disturbing factor that they noted is they actually started hearing deep animalistic growls coming from the shadows.
Oh, I hate that. I don't like that at all.
I do not like that at all. I don't like anything. Like, I don't want like, you could be sitting at your kitchen table eating cereal and you have to worry that, like, you know, the chair is going to come and smack you in the forehead.
Yeah.
Or, like, what if you're trying to pour cereal and every time you pour it, the bowl moves?
Or, I was going to say, every piece of cereal that falls out, like, flies up and hits you in the head.
Oh, God.
That'd be obnoxious.
I would literally...
A little hysterical.
I would literally just have a broom attached to my hip. I'd staple it to my forehead. Like, the amount of mess... If every time you had cereal... I really like cereal, so I would probably keep trying for a while. But if every time I ate cereal, it became 1,000 pieces on the ground.
Yeah.
Is life worth living if you can't have cereal?
I don't like cereal that much, so yes.
Man, the poltergeist would have it all wrong for you. All right, so at this point, like, if this episode didn't have a title, and I just described to you everything I described to you, would any part of you be thinking demonic, or would you be 100% poltergeist?
Poltergeist, all the way. That sounds totally poltergeist to
Even
me.
The animalistic growls?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like, that. This feels like a staple poltergeist case to me.
I agree. I was just curious, because I think there's hints of...
Possibly demonic?
Possibly.
I could see where you're saying that, like maybe with the symbols and the crosses and stuff.
Yeah.
And growling in the shadows. Like,
that's a big one.
That seems aggressive, but But I think poltergeists are just aggressive.
Saying there was French words, how would a French growl sound? Yes. All right. Need that humor because we're going to two very creepy things.
Oh, good.
So one, and they're short, but one thing that really impacted the grandmother was multiple times she was almost pushed down the stairs by these unseen hands, like just forceful pushing. Like they have a rail, so she didn't fall, but it became a thing where like she kept almost getting pushed, or well, was getting pushed, almost fell, which is just creepy. But here's like one of the main, I would say one of the main events that happened, and it happened to Shirley, and I alluded to it earlier. She was attacked by an unseen force and literally dragged out of her bed, and she started screaming, and her family rushed in to this terrifying sight of her wrestling and pulling at her sheets and like pulling against this unseen entity. Like they couldn't do anything. And they said Shirley went stiff and her back arched and she rose several inches from the bed, literally began levitating.
Whoa, that's wild.
Here's a quote from Shirley. Quote, "The bed sheets came off and I was floating. I thought I was going mad. I remember the sheets coming off and being tossed around in the bed. I was floating above the bed. When John pulled me down, I was rigid. My Nan, who was Catholic, thought I might be possessed by the devil. I thought I was going mad. I was crying all the time, very traumatized." Unquote.
Yeah, holy shit, that's crazy.
Yeah, and it seemed like this moment, that moment in her bed where then she began levitating, was like this spark that changed the activity, because it was kind of a family-wide, house-wide event. And this, it wasn't reported. This is just kind of based on me looking at it. It seems like a turning point. The key initiated these events, and I feel like that attack initiated a switch from it being a house-wide haunting or poltergeist encounter to now it really starts focusing on Shirley.
Yeah.
Like, Shirley is now the main focus.
Like, although there was a key thing, I think that was an indicator that it was going to be Shirley. But also,
yeah,
with a poltergeist, I've mentioned before, it comes from that changing energy of,
yes,
puberty. Yep. Of life differences.
You did say that, and she is 15.
Yeah, she's as soon as you said she was 15, I was like, she's the target, 100%.
I don't think any 15-year-old girl is like, this is the best time of my life. Probably not the same for 15-year-old boys either. But yes, I agree, and you're correct. The poltergeist picked Shirley as its target. The strange banging and the noises, they started following her around. In the house, it would follow her around. But even when she left the house, like, this is like, okay, we're out of that traditional haunting. Like, oh, we're out of the house, we're safe. No. Shirley was hearing these noises when she was out and about. And it would even affect her when she was shopping. And it impacted her job as being a seamstress. Her boss started thinking she was pulling pranks because scissors and other items would go missing. And they assumed it was her because she was always the one around. So they thought she was stealing, and it actually got her fired.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine being harassed 24/7?
No.
No.
No, it's miserable. It's like a, what is it? It's a spam phone caller.
Yeah.
Imagine if every 4 minutes you were getting a spam phone call and you couldn't block it. You just had, so like, you're on TikTok, phone call. You're on Instagram, phone call. You're trying to call your mom, phone call. Trying to go on Facebook, phone call. Trying to listen to a podcast,
phone call. That'd be terrible. And you can't even mute these because there's just like these sharp bangs that follow her. And it's just like,
yeah, no one deserves that.
No.
The spam or the haunting thing. Neither one is good. So just a couple months later, as all this stuff was escalating, like I said, it started getting national press. Photographers were lingering around. Journalists were around. They wanted to get a word or two out of the family. Daily Mail got in touch with her and they invited her being Shirley, to the head office. She was searched very intricately to see, you know, make sure there were no tricks, she had nothing up her sleeves, no charades. Nothing ended up happening at that event, but still, you know, I guess cool for her. But all this press, all this stuff coming on, did bring a paranormal investigator to their door named Harold Chibbett, also known as Chib. He was a ghost hunter who ended up pretty much devoting the rest of his life to this Battersea case. He was really big into other paranormal investigators, was big fans of some of the bigger dogs around that time, and I think he looked at this as his opportunity to make a name for himself, which, you know, if you're hearing about this, he did. So Chib was involved. He was interested. He started listening to Shirley's stories. He was listening to the family stories. And he actually spent time at the house, like evenings, surveying the home and trying to collect as much evidence as he could. And due to his consistent exposure to the family, he did experience the phenomenon himself. And he, through his research, his paranormal experience, was able to tell the family what they were up against. And he said, poltergeist.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds right.
He knew it. He's like, according to this book, there's four indicators. And y'all got all four.
Yeah, it's pretty evident this is a poltergeist.
Yes. Checks all the boxes.
Does it do anything more rare than what it's talked about? Like, does it do like puddles or anything like that?
You really want some puddles up in here.
I don't know. I like the puddle phenomenon, I think.
Just, it turns on the faucet. It lets the tub overflow.
The thing about the puddles is, there's no reason for them to appear anywhere, and then they just vanish.
Ghosties be peeing their pants. No, nothing. Well, maybe. There's a lot of writing.
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
Writing isn't water. What do you mean?
It's not true. You'll find out.
Okay.
Stick along for the ride.
All right. I'm here.
Yes. So he told him, hey, it's a little rare. Not for the UK. Y'all got fucking poltergeists everywhere up in here. But you know, it's kind of rare, but you know, that's why you're dealing with these physical disturbances. That's why objects are being thrown around. That's why you're hearing these loud noises.
That's why you're being levitated in your bed.
Yes. Listen, she is not possessed, just poltergeist.
That is the horror movie poster, by the way. Whoa. Just this girl in her bed arching back above her bed, rather.
Very, very scary.
Yeah,
very scary. And he did. He even explained. He's like, there's usually a teenage girl at the center of poltergeist activity.
Yeah.
Enter Shirley. So obviously Shirley and her family were like terrified. Like, even though they've been experiencing it now, it's like they knew their enemy. They knew what they were up against, this poltergeist. And they had no idea what a poltergeist was. They had no idea what to do about it. Felt hopeless. It was like a life sentence to misery, as long as if nothing changed.
Yeah. And they're just like this quintessential British family, so all they know is tea
crumpets,
tea and crumpets,
and some fish
and red buses. That's all they know.
Yes, but you know, they didn't really know what all that entailed, so they actually did try to have Shirley exercise. They did set up an exorcism.
Was the guy, oh, what's his name, Richard Simmons. Richard Simmons came over and said, one and kick.
Kick that demon. No.
Oh, I'm glad we got exercise. No, thank you, Mr. Simmons.
He might have been more equipped, though. Wally at his job, there was this guy who worked with Wally named Harry, who is also a part-time medium.
When Harry met Wally.
And he was like, hey, do you want to perform an exorcism on my daughter? And he's like, charged like $75 an hour. He's like, okay, that's a joke. He didn't found Harry on Craigslist. But it never actually happened. Before the exorcism could begin, the police arrived because they got tipped off about some alleged, quote, black magic and witchcraft.
Hardcore.
And they put a halt to the event. As much as we're allowed to have poltergeists around here, only in the UK, no exorcisms. That's American shit. Actually, it's not at all.
No.
It's not American at all.
No.
So the next chip suggested, okay, so that didn't work. So why don't you like try to talk to the poltergeist? Which, and let me just make this very clear, because if you know, if you're driving or you're picking up your dog's poop right now, you know, you might, every now and then you miss a minute or two, right? You know, if you're focusing on what you're actually physically doing right now. When I start saying Donald, and you're like, who the fuck is Donald? Donald is what they start calling the poltergeist. The poltergeist is now Donald, one in the same. Apparently, I didn't see this. I only saw this on one of the sources I looked at. But apparently, they started calling him Donald. Do you have a guess?
Donald Duck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because a Donald Duck had a temper.
A temper. Makes sense. My grandpa could do the voice.
Yeah.
He could do the voice really good. That was the only funny thing he ever did. But
only funny
thing. But I can't do the voice. I wish I could. But
he channeled all of his humor.
Yes. Yeah.
He's like, damn it, I can only do one thing to make people smile.
Yeah, he was a carpenter in Ohio, so
I'm going to keep doing it. Yeah. So anyway, poltergeist, Donald Duck, one and the same, right? So then Chib's like, yo, let's talk to Donald. Because at this point, he's already writing symbols. He's already scribbling on the wall. He's writing crosses. He's like, we really have nothing left to loot. So he brought a bunch of letter cards to the house, and he laid them down on the table. So basically, Chib would point to a letter, and if there was a tapping sound, then they interpreted that as correct. That is a correct letter. So they'd point to a letter. If they heard a tapping, they wrote it down. And then that's how they would spell out words. Kind of like...
It's almost like a Ouija board.
Kind of like a Ouija board. Kind of like what they did in Stranger Things with the lights.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? So it's just trying to find creative ways to get this thing to talk. To get Donald to speak. And believe it or not, it actually worked. Obviously, it worked. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about it probably on this episode. Slowly, it began to tap out... Tap out messages. And Donald claimed to be French.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yes. In fact, he actually detailed a very extensive identity. Donald claimed that he was Louis Charles, the very short-lived Louis the 17th, who was rumored to have escaped captivity during the French Revolution.
I have heard about this.
Yeah.
I've heard about this story.
And he told the family that he drowned in a river upon his exile.
Yeah.
And that he was very, very scared. But the family, this is like too much. There's no empathy. They didn't feel sorry for this poltergeist. They literally been put through hell for months. And they were like, okay, cool. Cool story. You got to go. Mm-hmm. You have to get out of here. Didn't work. Spoiler.
But they said, there's La Porte. Goodbye.
Chib would leave a paper and pen in this front room in the house that basically had a lock that only Chib would take with him. It's a weird thing to give the stranger.
Chib lock. Chib lock right there. So that is for Chib, Mr. Chib. Only Chib.
Only Chib has the key to Donald's room.
Every house is a Chib lock. Actually, you just gotta find it.
It's a knockoff the old Chib lock. So the room was became known as Donald's room because apparently in that room he would tap along to music that he heard on the television and apparently would also arrange dolls in a circle. And when they came in the next morning and they unlocked the Chib lock, and they looked inside. It was not unusual for them to find, like, notes on notes. 50 notes, what? 60 notes, 70 notes.
Really?
The first note that they ever found, very chillingly, just said, "Surely I come."
That's scary. That's really scary.
Yeah.
That's really like, scary.
Anytime, I mean, we've talked about it before, there is power in a name.
Yeah.
And normally we mean that in terms of you using the entity's name,
mm-hmm.
but if there was any chance my house was haunted and anything wrote out Tyler, no.
You'd be
no,
done.
No, no. It's like,
you move Tyler, Metz to the Falls real quick.
And then it's like, big fan of the podcast. And they're like, actually, it's Charlie and Tyler.
Oh.
About your Alaska episode, right, we gotta get this guy out of here.
It's too scary.
But a lot of it was illegible. Like I said, there was a mixture between French and English, and it also referenced Chib. It apparently some of the letters and notes were addressed to Mon Chéri Chibet.
Was that my
friend?
My friend, yeah.
No, I don't think
Chéri, is that precious?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if it's lover or more.
No, that's not love.
I think it is friend.
I think it is friend as well. It's like treasure or something like that.
I'm thinking of the song My Chéri Amour.
I'm just thinking my French lessons.
Oh, yeah, you were learning French.
Yeah, all right. I'm okay at it.
So your Chéri is someone you prize and treasure.
Okay, so I was close.
So anyway, as time went on, these letters became more than just letters. They became demands. Donald started making demands and threatening to burn down the house if they didn't give him what he wanted. And he wasn't very clear on what he wanted. Again, it was illegible. Some of the stuff revolved around Shirley, but still, yeah. He was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to burn this place down. I'm going to burn the Chib lock. He's like, I've done three of the four indicators, and you're about to get that fourth one.
Dang.
Which actually ended up doing. Quote from Shirley, quote, Donald started making demands, wanting me to wear my hair a certain way, and threaten us, saying he'd set fires in the house. Dad locked all the matches and knives in our air raid shelter. But it did no good because fires started happening all over the house. One night, Dad got burned putting out a fire. Underneath the burn were gouge marks, like he'd been clawed.
Oh my God. That's so scary, but kind of hardcore.
It actually led to Wally having to go to the hospital to get treated for these wounds.
Christ.
That would be a tough...
I was attacked by a burning dog? Like, what do you say?
You go inside, they're like, all right, so what happened? What are you doing here? It's like, totally not a poltergeist named Donald.
that's wild.
They're like, you're in the UK. The poltergeist room is over there.
That's crazy. that Donald's like, wear your hair a certain way. Like, that's an abusive relationship right there.
It is. I would say that the entirety of this relationship is abusive. So one night in October 1956, in addition to obviously objects still being flung about, something new happened. They started hearing whispering. And it was really hard at first to tell what it was, what it was saying, but it started to get a little bit louder, and then it was clear it was a woman, and it was a woman with an Irish accent. And this absolutely terrified and freaked out Shirley's grandmother because she said it sounded just like her mother's voice.
Oh, she was like, oh, the Irish are coming.
No. Sounded like her mother's voice, which actually made the grandmother have a breakdown.
Oh, God.
She ran to her room, shut the door. A few days later, suffered a stroke. A few days later, died.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Wow. That's intense.
Yeah. And tragic.
I was going to make a joke, but I don't feel like doing it anymore.
Save it. Again, this poltergeist activity and hauntings for Shirley and her family went on for 12 years. Here's a quote from Shirley. It ruined my life. It took my teenage years. I was 21 before I could get anything near normality. And even then, he interfered with my life. One boyfriend came to my house and was trying to goad Donald by saying things like, come on, Donald, do your worst. But he ran away after a bowl was tipped onto his head.
She dating Zach Baggins? Come on, bro. Let's go.
As soon as I walked inside, Donald came out to say hello.
I'm not scared, Donald. Come on, bro. Let's go.
Like Shirley sits on a chair and it makes a squishy noise. Like, oh my God, did you hear that? Oh my God, bro, did you get that?
No, a bowl gets dumped on this guy's head, right? But in the meantime, Shirley's doing a full arch back in the sky again.
All right, Aaron, I want you to go down to the basement, turn off all the lights, turn off, you know, any way of seeing. I want you to sit down silently. I want you to start writing 666 on the wall. And if any puddles form, let me know.
Okay, Zach.
Whatever you say. So it's estimated that over those 12 years, remember these letters, these messages, that there were 3,000 to 4,000 messages written by Donald.
Wow.
Yes. And the last message came in 1968, the end of 12 years. So Shirley was living in, oh my God, Sussex, with her husband and their baby boy. And Donald would occasionally leave messages on their notepad. Like, he would tell her what her parents were doing back in London. And he would be right.
That's wild.
Little weird things like that. After 12 years, it was like she was numb. Like, oh, this lamp flew up and smashed against the ceiling. You know what I call that? I call that Tuesday.
She's like, I guess I'll have a tea, a spot of tea to calm the nerves.
Maybe she likes online shopping, and she was like, oh, I'd hate it if you broke that old desk. They just opened up an IKEA over here in Sussex.
Yes.
Could really go for some meatballs. But there was the final note.
That's ominous.
And the final note said that he was leaving, and that was it. And they never heard from him again. Strangely enough, Shirley said that her mom actually, well, mom, you know, as they say,
mom,
went into mourning, and she actually started thinking of Donald like a son.
What?
Very strange, but Shirley said that her and her father were like, yeah.
Good. Thank goodness. Like, yes, goodbye.
They were very happy.
You French son of a bitch.
And in the 60s, the house was demolished. You know, it was like, okay, the stuff is behind me, and that's kind of the end of the main stuff, but there's a little bit more, a little bit tidbit here. In the 1980s, a psychic medium approached Shirley because they had to tell her something important. And the medium told Shirley that she was being followed by a little boy. And what stood out as strange to the medium is what this little boy was wearing. She said he was wearing this, like, fanciest dress thing, like a very, like, it was blue satin, uh-huh. And this little boy had red hair. And immediately that struck Shirley, because she remembered back to Chib, and Chib had given her a postcard back when they were talking to Donald, and this postcard supposedly depicted Louis Charles, so Louis the 17th. And on that freaking postcard, Louis was wearing a blue satin suit and he had red hair.
Man, that's creepy. I have a theory. I'll save it for the discussion.
And she also said that the little boy was sorry for what he'd done. Don't believe it. Maybe the mom believes it. Surely don't believe
that it. That he was sorry?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So that is the story. That is the Battersea Poltergeist. Let's get to a little skepticism that's been reported. There's probably more, but this is the little bit I found.
Right? Okay. All right. Don't let me forget this theory. It's a good theory.
Say it. Give me a keyword. Puddle?
No. Not enough energy.
Energy. Okay, cool. So here's the skepticism. There's probably more, like I said. This is from History Hit again. We're going to start with History Hit. We're going to end with History Hit. Some people thought the noises were coming from the house because it was located on an uneasy, uneven marshland, which obviously makes lamps fly in the air.
Right.
Others believe that acid was in the soil, which could have led to madness. I don't know if they were eating off their land or licking the dirt.
Although if they have a garden.
Yes, that's true. In the 50s.
Maybe absolutely.
You got their fish plant and their chip plant. We'll make fun of America next time, I promise.
There's a chip plant. It's a potato plant.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't joking.
That one's not as far-fetched. Well, the fish plant is not, you know, that's fine.
Also, apparently handwriting experts analyzed the letters back then, and they claim without a shadow of a doubt that Donald's letters were written by Shirley.
I knew you were going to say someone in the family looked like they authored the letters.
Yeah.
I knew that was going to be a thing.
The idea was that Shirley was getting famous. Mm. And there were people that were questioning whether Shirley was the one doing all this stuff. And there was actually a quote I read in an article where her family believed her because she was a very good child. She was an honest child. And there was just one moment, one time, where Wally was like, Shirley, are you doing this? And Shirley was like, no, I swear to God, I'm not. And he's like, that's good for me. Like, I trust you. I had to ask, but I trust you. With that said, let's move on to the discussion. Now is the time when we stop the episode, and we like to thank our newest patrons at the recording of this episode, who are Letty, Allington Brown, Josh, Colby, Zachary, Eric, Angelina, Jerry, Gabby, Mindy, Nate, and Alejandra. Charlie, I need you to do me a favor. I need you to tell Mindy what she is now getting by being... I went to high school with Mindy, by the way. I need you to tell Mindy what she is getting now that she is a patron.
What's the mascot of your school?
A warrior.
I will tell this fellow high school warrior what they are going to receive. They can get things like interviews, they can get quizzes, they can get Do You Believe the Bizarres social media responses, where we talk about social media, these posts that we put up, and we talk about what people said, what we respond to it, how we feel, how they feel. It's a lot of fun. And also, there's things like Netflix movie watch parties, Google Hangouts, and coming soon, theatrical readings.
That is right. There's a ton of bonus content. We love making it. We love putting it out there. We love getting the responses. So if you are listening to the podcast, you're enjoying it, and you want a little bit more, there is so much extra content out there. Plus, $10 tier, dedicated tier. You do, after 3 months, automatically get an exclusive shirt that you can only get by being a patron. With that said, let's move on to the discussion. Charlie, we're talking about poltergeists, we're talking about Donald, we're talking about Chib, and we're talking about the UK. So there was a key word, I don't know if it's going to be in the episode or not, you might cut it, but you said to remind you about energy.
Yes, I had a thought about this. Tell me what you think.
Yes.
Do you think after the whole thing was said and done, because Shirley wasn't going through that change anymore, that the poltergeist ran out of juice to like take and use? And had to revert to being just like this typical little ghost.
Do you think it went back to being a little ghost?
Yeah. I mean, I only came up with that theory because of what the medium said.
I got you. Like, even if it was still following her, it didn't have enough energy to do anything.
Yeah.
My only thought would be, and I'm not an expert in women, but 12 years feels like a long time. Like, if this was like from 15 to like 19 or 15 to 21... Maybe, I'm not saying you're wrong. I mean, you could be 100% correct. I just feel like 12 years, like 15 to 27.
Maybe like, just like supercharged when she was younger.
And just and it took was that long feeding
to,
off of it.
Yeah. It took that long to like cool down.
Yeah. He filled up his savings and just started living off of it.
Yeah, exactly.
But time's getting tough. I don't know. I mean, I think it's possible. I mean, it could definitely be there's no reason that we know of why he decided to back away. Mm-hmm. I doubt he just got bored.
Right.
So I don't know. I think that's putting two and two together for a possible
reason. It's an idea. It's an idea that I had.
So let me ask you this. What do you think the key was all about?
I think that's permission. I think that was a permission thing. If I had to guess, it's this manifestation of something. It's almost like the start, right? A silver key that unlocks a door. It's almost figurative.
An entrance.
Yeah.
Open the door for me.
Now, they didn't find a physical one, but they kept it. They played with it. They gave it their touch.
I wonder if she would have never touched the key. She goes to school, draws because she's in art class, and then comes back and looks at her pillow and it's gone. And it just, like, he moved on to the next house.
I mean, we can't know. Obviously, we can't know, but maybe. I mean, if there's no permission given,
yeah,
whether that be verbal or nonverbal or physical, maybe.
It's such a random, it's like if this poltergeist was sitting around and was like, I want to leave an object. Like, what if he spent months? What's the perfect object to leave? He's like, an apple. He's like, no, like maybe a picture. It's like, no, it's like a key, the symbolism. It's too good.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Teenage girls love symbolism.
It's very symbolic. So it's almost honestly, it's a little heavy-handed.
It's also super random, and it never comes back. He didn't follow Chekhov. It never came back, but that also somehow, some way makes it feel more real to me.
Mm-hmm.
So let me move on to my next question for you. Now, you mentioned this earlier in the episode, based on what we've heard and what you've seen. It's poltergeists typically aren't tied to people that have died.
Right.
This one, however, has been theorized to be Louis Charles or Louis the 17th.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
I don't know. Like, every poltergeist story, some poltergeist stories I've heard have been tied to people. Like, the Enfield poltergeist, I know we haven't done it yet. I know I shouldn't reference it, but I know it's tied to a person as well.
In the UK.
In the UK.
Yeah.
A British man, yes. So I think that's perfectly plausible. That's the whole reason I broached this subject when I talked about the Thornton Heath, is that I think it can be tied to humans, that it is this, like, hyper energy that, like, regular spirits can get and swell up with and become violent in a lack of words.
Are there puddles in the Enfield one?
I think there are, yeah.
Mm.
I think there are.
What if, now this would be very interesting, if they came back and, like, Shirley described the key, and they're like, that sounds like a French-style key from the French Revolution or something. Like, that would be trippy.
That would be good evidence for it to be that person, wouldn't it?
Credence, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Credence out the wazoo.
So are there any other moments, things that struck you? Again, the thing with the grandmother is very tragic. Now, obviously, well, I mean, it feels like a very direct cause.
Yes. Yes, it does. But also, did the poltergeist mimic her mother's voice?
It's such a weird, unusual, like, I feel like this story has both traditional poltergeist moments, but also some very strange...
That one's weird to me. Although, what if it's just like a separate haunting on top of the poltergeist?
Oh my god, this other ghost came in, did this shit, and was like, all right, I'm good, I'm out, I'm clocking out.
Or what if it's like a banshee or something? Because a banshee is Irish folklore.
Man, just hearing her mom's voice and it just broke her. It's very sad.
Yes.
Did anything else stand out to you?
Arson is pretty big.
The fire?
Yeah.
Dad got clawed, gouged.
Yeah. That's wicked. That's crazy. I don't even know what to categorize that as. That's super aggressive.
It would be.
I wonder why.
Obviously, when you can pinpoint certain things and you can be like, oh, that's a poltergeist, or from a distance, like, we have nothing to do with this story, so we can be like, it sounds like a poltergeist.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when you're in it, when you're in the heat of the moment, like, if 95% of this was happening to me, my family, and my house, I feel like, and we've talked about this before, where it's like, if you see an insect or an animal, you can look it up and be like, that is this type of bobcat, that this is this type of arachnid or whatever. But I feel like with spirits and ghosts and poltergeists and things like that. It's so hit or miss, and it's so he said, she said. Even though it rings true that it's a poltergeist, I would be terrified that this was demonic activity still. There's like the clawing, the growling, the crosses, like there's little hints that this could be demonic. And I think that's where my mind would, because that's like, I'm not even religious, but that's like one of the scariest things I think could ever happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing, like in that moment, you can test that, like you could test it with, like, I think a demon or demonic activity would act differently to certain things than a poltergeist would.
The grandmother did put actually holy water on Shirley and nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
The exorcism didn't get to happen because of the police.
Right.
I don't know. And that's just me putting myself in this situation. Like, mm-hmm. my mind would go worst case scenario, and it would be that.
Yeah.
So I wonder, it's easier for us, I think, from a distance to say definitely a poltergeist. But I do believe that, you know, if true, it was a poltergeist. But if I put myself in their position, in the back of my mind, like that scratching, it'd be like, what if it's a demon?
But both things are both very negative, though. So they both have negativity. Like, it feels like different.
Oh, the levitating too. The levitating and the arching and stuff. I mean, if you only saw that and you didn't hear anything else, you'd think possession.
Yeah, probably would. I think it's like two different versions of the same thing.
Yeah, but thankfully we got, you know, the history hit and stuff to tell us the whole story.
Yes.
So Charlie, or you were about to say something. I'm sorry.
No, it's just that it feels like two different kinds of different negativity.
So where do you land on the believability scale, which we do at the end of every episode, where we rate these stories from believable to viable to skeptical to unbelievable? Where do you land on the Battersea poltergeist?
I'm going to go with viable. I think it's viable because there are witnesses outside of the family. Chib.
The Chibster.
Who was not part of the family, but inserted himself. Although you could say this was maybe his 15 minutes, and he saw that and said, let's expand upon that.
He kind of became family. He became like a family friend. Mm-hmm.
And there's also, in the beginning, those lights and shaking the house that was seen by other people.
Yeah.
And just neighbors. The one house. Yeah.
Neighbors, yeah.
They witnessed it. Photography happened. It was a big thing for a while that other people saw.
Which is why I go believable.
Okay.
Now.
That's fair.
And I think I would go believable in terms of accepting it's a poltergeist as well. Because sometimes I toe the line between, I don't know if the way it's classified is believable, but I believe that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But due to the witnesses, the only thing is like, okay, where are all the letters? Did Shirley write these letters? But something was happening. Even if, it couldn't have all been Shirley. Shirley couldn't have done all the noises and the scratching. Like, that couldn't be her.
Yeah.
Like, in one room, but it's spreading across the house. And also, the letters were found in the room that was locked with a key that Chib had when he left.
Yeah.
So, unless there's a secret passage from the conservatory to the lounge?
Or a piece of paper could fit under a door.
The kitchen to the study.
All right.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Clue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you. I only question that Chib was maybe getting his 15 minutes. Maybe they exaggerated some things.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some real explanations, or maybe some things are just expounded upon.
They just had a boombox from playing, like,
although
creepy monster mash noises, and, like, the neighbors are going to love this.
Mostly, I believe it. I don't...
Yeah. No, I know. So that is our episode on the Battersea Poltergeist. I hope you liked it. We've had a good mix here. This is like a really good mixtape. Mm-hmm. We've had folklore, we've had cryptids, we've had aliens, and now we have a haunting. Like, we are covering those bases, and who knows what we're going to get next week. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Oh, it is up in the air, but thank you everybody so much for listening. If you liked this episode, if you've liked the previous few episodes, if you like listening to us, please head to Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star, leave a couple words, a couple sentences. Aw, man, that's great. Means a lot to Charlie and I. We're going to screenshot and post it on Instagram for the world to see your kind words. Or if you're listening on Spotify, much simpler, just hit that 5 stars and keep it on moving.
And if you do really enjoy this episode and you want to see what more we have beyond just our content, that's free and available. You can always check out our Patreon. We mentioned a lot of things mid-episode that are on there, but there's even more. And you can just dig and explore in a lot of things. And we get in touch with these patrons. We've almost formed a community at this point.
We're up in their grill. I will say the Google Hangout. The Google Hangout is an excellent form of the community because it keeps growing and it's always more exciting because, and a little behind the scenes. Sometimes, you know, there's people that we expect to be in the Google Hangout and it's like catching up. Like you finish conversations that you started last month, but there's always this moment where Charlie and I are looking at the computer and it pops up and it's like, so-and-so wants to enter. Will you admit them? And me and Charlie are like, yo, who the f*** is that? And we're like, is this their first time being in there? And it's like straight in the tie. Like, oh my God. This is their first impression. And then you hit enter and you're like, oh, hi, welcome. I don't know. It's funny because we experience that every week.
We are so nervous.
It's so much fun. It's an awesome time. It really, you said it best. It is a community. Patreon is a community. We've made friends. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are liking the podcast, we've never really said this. If you love the paranormal and you like talking to people that like the paranormal, it is a community beyond just Charlie and I. Mm-hmm. Especially like, for instance, if you're in our Discord, you can be in our Discord even if it's free. We do have a Patreon Discord for our giveaways, which keep that hush hush. Patreon don't like the giveaways.
No, they don't like
do,
that.
We do have giveaways, but if you want to be in a like-minded paranormal enthusiastic community, check out our Discord because it's not even about the podcast anymore, and that is completely fine. Like it is whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah,
with other people that love horror movies and games and hate going to work and like scary stuff
that.
and Pokemon and our great artists. And it's just really cool. It literally, our Discord is a community.
Yeah. 100%.
And it's beyond, like it's grown past the podcast in many ways, which is cool. So go check that out. But above all, we appreciate you listening. We appreciate the support. As always, I'm Tyler.
And I'm Charlie.
And catch us next week on Believing the Bizarre.
A podcast as bizarre as you are. Is that America?
No, it is not. Okay. There's no poltergeist in America. Where's Engfield?
UK.
Are they only in the UK? As far as I'm concerned, that's 3 for 3.
Is this UK as well?
It is.
God damn.
Demands. Darnold. Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold.